I'm really delighted to be here. We've been working now for about 4 years with this project, and it's very exciting for us. And today I'm going to get to present some of our qualitative data that is really being very revealing to us in terms of this. I would like to recognize my co-investigators, Gisela Ragusa and Donna Sprouse-Metz, Camille Denard, and John Chan, who also worked with me on this project. I have no relationships to disclose, except that I have kids. this is a very large group effort. This is project was funded through a Center of Excellence for Minority Health from the Institute for Minority Health and Health Disparities to a center grant that went to Dr. Michael Gorin, who is an expert in obesity prevention at USC. So this is our camp, our kids, and some of the staff and some of the mentors that worked with us. And not everybody's here. This is just one picture, and we did get consent to show you the picture. So the specific aims of the curriculum for MyLA are to build youth leadership capacity to become community agents of change and provide participants with health leadership training, skill-building activities, to help youth take action in their own communities, and to bring about individual behavior change through empowerment by increasing knowledge, affecting attitudes, and encouraging participation in health-based community projects. And one of the things with our project is that although this was an obesity prevention project, we didn't want to engage youth in obesity prevention like through an obesity camp, where they felt, you know, that they were, you know, sort of like obese and they needed to lose weight. And that certainly was part of some of the work that we did. But this was more looking at it from how can you work on your environment to make changes that then also led to individual and family changes. So we looked at some of the social determinants that are specific to environmental issues that influence minority youth at the community level, and this included anywhere from school lunch programs, vending machines, lack of access to recreational facilities, and lack of access to affordable fresh fruits and vegetables. The whole theory behind this is Paulo Freire's popular education theory, which really stresses active listening to comprehend the issues and concerns at the community level, and to establish a discourse through talking circles and dialogue about selected issues in which all participants are co-learners, and the actions and reflections are key to the learning process. So pretty much the participants are the ones that determine their own destiny within this kind of theory. It's interesting because I do a lot of work in community-based participatory research, and many of the same principles that apply in terms of co-learning and establishing certain levels of equality in terms of the relationships with agencies as well as with individuals at the community level are very much part of the empowerment education theory and very part of Paulo Freire's Educación Popular. And so this was coined in Brazil, and we have been using this theory, especially working with youth, because it works really well for us. So this intervention to empower youth to deal with social determinants that influence obesity included a 5-day summer camp on the USC campus. And we thought a lot about, should we do a residential camp? Should we do, you know, a longer camp? But we found out that the kids were really, really busy during the summer, and that there was hesitancy with a residential camp. We tried to go to Catalina Island, which was, you know, had to go on a boat ride and a bus ride, and some of the parents weren't too keen on that, although they wanted their kids participating, but that became a little bit of an issue for us. And so we decided to leave it at the USC campus, which is a beautiful campus downtown. And then one added benefit was that they got to interact with a lot of students, and that became an inspiration as well, and you'll see later about some of them wanting to go to college. So actually that was something that was not, it was an unintended good consequence. So We had a very culturally diverse staff. We had a team of both African American and Latino staff. And we had a series of nutrition and physical activity modules. And then one of the key elements of the curriculum is the development of a 4-month community action plan, which was followed up with the mentors and through monthly culture circles and biweekly teleconferences. A lot of planning and implementation and the use of Facebook and a lot of the youth social media. We developed a culturally tailored intervention that had both elements that were keen to various groups and also that empowers youth to take action for their own health, to become advocates for their families and communities. So some of the things that they wouldn't act on because of themselves, they would act on it if they could see how it was impacting their kids or their family, their little brothers and sisters or their family. And also to build capacity among the teens to really change these behaviors that, sort of got you to become more obese at the interpersonal, familial, and community level. And a lot of our kids had either really were over the 80 percentile in terms of BMI, and the majority of them, I think, all but one, had a family history of diabetes where either one or both parents had diabetes and where grandparents also had diabetes. So it was sort of like more not a matter of if but when. And so that was a big concern for us. We had 38 total participants, and we aim for an even mix of gender and ethnicity. The kids were between the ages of 14 to 17, and here again, 85 BMI percentile for their age group. And they had also previously participated in 2 center studies, so this became sort of like the reward for them as well, so they saw this as the most exciting part of it. And they were all located within a 20-mile radius. So our empowerment curriculum was patterned after the California Youth Advocacy Network, which is a network that was developed in tobacco control about 15 to 18 years ago. And so they had a residential camp that lasted about 2 weeks on tobacco inoculation. And so I've done a lot of work in tobacco control. So instead of reinventing the wheel, we pretty much use a lot of those same strategies. The empowerment curriculum, one key element of it were the mentors, which were really an integral part of the program, and walked with the youth for the entire 4-month period, so the 5-day summer camp and then the 4 months. And they facilitated the development of the student's action plan. They help with the implementation of community action plans, and they engage in follow-up supervision for 3 months after the students participated in all camp activities. So they were with these kids for about 7 months total. So here are some of the components. One of the components was at the very beginning, the development of murals, just on big sheets of paper, and I'll show you some, where they expressed what were their community needs and how they viewed their communities in respect to other communities. We also had them work on video ethnographies, and we did training of video ethnographies. We also did training of photo voice and digital storytelling. We also had nutrition and physical activity sessions, and we have a whole curriculum. I didn't bring it because it's a bit bulky, but if you want to see it or something, you can let me know and give me your card. Building personal resiliency to combat obesity at community level. There were leadership development modules, public speaking development modules, and public advocacy letter writing. So you see that only one element is really looking at nutrition and physical activity here. There's a lot of other things that are going on that really captures their interest and keeps them very, very much engaged and gives them tools to move to action. So that was another important part of it. So here's, in terms of the film, they had to film their environment, literally just go out. This is an actual picture of some of the areas where the kids work, where they live. This is, like, unbelievable if you look at it. I mean, it is like fast food after fast food after fast food. So we also held a series of talking circles every 2 weeks with them in which they could discuss anywhere from the school lunch menu options to PE to neighborhood safety, lack of access to recreational facilities, lack of access to affordable fruits and vegetables. And although they lived in this area, they hadn't really become aware that this was a problem per se. So it was just part of their natural environment. And so they started an awareness of viewing things with different eyes. In terms of our measures, we had both quantitative and qualitative measures. We had youth empowerment measures. We also have BMI, glucose, waist-hip measurement. I'm not presenting any of that today, but those are still analysis that we're working on. An empowerment scale, and I also in the curriculum includes copies of all of these. And in the qualitative, there was a lot of journal entry, so we had them keep journals, and that was has been very valuable. Debriefing interviews that we conducted with all the kids, CAP notes, and we always taped our meeting discussions. So that's part of the data that I'm going to present today. But using mixed methods, the team was able to assess a series of variables that became important on in terms of moving the kids into preventing obesity at the community level. So we had a total of 38 participants. This is a distribution between African American and Latino kids. We had more girls than boys. That tends to be a lot in public health. And so, but it was interesting, their dynamics and how they worked with each other as well. And I have to confess, we did do a pilot test, and we were a little bit concerned because the week that we ran the pilot test with African American and Latino youth, we live in Los Angeles. Los Angeles, around USC, there are 64 known gangs, and there was a gang warfare going on. So we were really worried about bringing our kids together, both because there's a lot of rivalry between Latino and African American gangs in LA as well. But the kids did great, and they were just amazing, and even taught us how to navigate some of that world, which we were very grateful. So here are some of the outcomes in terms of pre- and post-test empowerment. So you could see before, you know, right at the beginning of the camp, we took a series of measurements, and you could see the increases in the post-intervention about 4 months later in terms of how they had really felt empowered by the program. So here's a picture of some of the murals. And again, like I said, we have a lot of qualitative data, so you're going to see a lot of quotes. But here, one of our 15-year-olds says, "We live where the trees are barren." So that was like, whoa, significant, you know. So if you see the top one, you know, they're saying, you know, this is our community, this is other communities, and we live in this community. Our community has a lot of fast food places, while the good communities do not. And that's kind of painful to hear the good communities. To me, it wasn't just that they had fast food. It was that they saw their community as not a good community. And so that has implications as well. And you could see the little devil there is actually a bag of French fries. And you could see like a hamburger on the top. So the action plans that the kids developed included healthy food preparations and demonstrations in their high schools, a photo voice project, youth advocacy videos that they worked on sugary beverage consumption, and they also, some of them even contacted their congressional representatives on the Child Nutrition Act and asked them what was their stand on that and what were they doing for their community. And we were so proud of them. And you know that what moves legislators are the future voters of America. So that was exciting. And they also did sugary beverage demonstrations to third grade elementary school children. So they really wanted to kind of get their younger brothers and sisters involved, and so they went to the elementary schools to get this kind of work done. Some of them even started a health club at school, Others created videos highlighting unhealthy foods, created pamphlets, delivered healthy food presentations. And here is nutrition and physical activity pamphlets and posters for the walls of elementary schools and for distribution of the family and community. These all came from the kids themselves. I love the one on the right. It's so professionally done. And it was just them. They're the ones putting it together. You know, we give them all the tools to do so. Here's one of the sugary beverage demonstrations that they're doing. And it was just amazing when, you know, if you've done those, when you start putting the amount of sugar that is on these beverages and they see, you know, a little Ziploc bag that gets filled, you know, so high, it's so revealing about what's really happening. So our qualitative analytical scheme looks a little bit like this, with youth empowerment, emergent leadership, and understanding need for change and knowledge about nutrition and health. So some of the major themes that we saw were the identification of barriers to health and desires for changes in the community. So in terms of barriers, gang violence, lack of safety, abundance of street trash. In terms of empowerment and realized changes, they saw that they gained confidence in public speaking. That was something they were really worried about. Sort of felt not very confident speaking publicly. We also had some students who experienced weight loss over the total 4-month period, and one child a year later that we still are following up has actually lost 60 pounds. So we're very excited. But there was probably more like a 15-pound weight loss. And the biggest thing was also sort of getting healthy eating concepts. So you could see here that in terms of percentage, the females felt more empowered than the males. But you could see also increases in knowledge among all of them. And some of the issues they were dealing with, such as trash, they kept talking about trash and drugs. And that we kind of know for these areas that the kids live in. And this is the difference between the Latino kids and the African American kids. And the Latino kids, a larger percentage of the Latino kids felt empowered than the African American kids, but both were pretty much, you know, over 50%. So we felt really good about that. And then all the issues of lack of safety that they experience anywhere, and that's anywhere from being in this drug-related area to stray dogs in the street, you know, that are not letting them, you know, really go out and run or do different kinds of activities. So I'm going to just present a few little quotes now because I've got 5 minutes left. So the desire for change, I would try to change the community's eating habits by making sure we have healthy foods and less junk food. I would build a building and let people in the community know that they're welcome to come and exercise and have some fun. So these are some of the things that they want to talk about. One thing I would change about my community is for people to get involved in specific issues that the community has to have a say in, how much money should be spent. So they're talking about, you know, graffiti in their communities, etc. So again, some of the environmental issues deal with gang violence, lack of safety, prevalence of fast food, availability of tobacco and alcohol. This has been beneficial to my view of society and family. I have seen that my experience has made a huge impact on my way of living. I came to my LA empty-handed, but today I live with my hands armed with knowledge and skills. So we saw quite a bit of emergent leadership. This is the students while we're doing one of the talking circles. I thought I should show you more of the physical activity ones, but the physical activity ones, we actually had an African-American man who had run track, and he was actually an Olympic track person, and he volunteered his time for this program, and it was just amazing all the work that he did with the kids and showed them that to exercise they didn't need to go to a gym. A lot of the boys were really interested in weightlifting, so he was able to show them how to fill different containers of water and how that was a certain weight and how they could use that. So it was just, you know, that kind of level. She's telling me I have 1 minute. I changed my eating habits, and now I go with my mom to the grocery store and buy more healthy foods for my family. So some of the observed barriers that we saw was food insecurity in the home. These were some of the barriers to some of the kids we had more problems with in terms of finishing the program. Limited family support and unstable family environments. Switching phones, disconnecting phones, that was a major issue. And there's a need for a lot of tight follow-up and monitoring of the kids, and that's why we had 2 weeks and monthly kinds of meetings. So the intervention time, it can't be a very lengthy program. It doesn't work. These kids are really busy. It's amazing just how busy they are. So it has to be a short frame program. Transportation is key. You know, they don't drive. And their parents, it's hard for them to get them there. And increasing mentor involvement was also very, very key. So what we saw were themes of personal empowerment and increased awareness. The social environmental determinants of health included lack of safety, food insecurity, unstable family environments. So our conclusions are that Latino and Black youth face important social challenges to consider if we are to obtain sustained changes at the community level. Social determinants must be viewed as a combination of factors that contribute to poor health and perpetuate health disparities at the community level. And I want to leave you with this thought that came from one of the kids, and it was one of the most striking things for me. After participating in our camp, I asked, you know, we asked all of them, well, what's the most significant thing that you found about the camp? And one of the kids said to me that I knew that I was going to eat every day. That was very poignant and still makes me stop and think about this, because a lot of times, you know, I do a lot of global health work, and we're trying to do, you know, save, you know, the world out there. And right in our backyard, we have major, major needs. And so although we are here today, I think it's great for the theme. Think globally, but act locally. Thank you.